the edge of our hope, at the end of our time. We have chosen not only to believe in ourselves, but in each other. Today we face the monsters that are at our door. Today we are canceling the apocalypse.
Now get the hell out of our galaxy.
The strength of this starship lay in its diversity.
You see, our glorious diversity, that is not a threat to who we are. It makes us who we are.
You don't just let things happen. You make a stand. You say no. You have the guts to do what's right when everyone else just runs away.
But we must fight this darkness that is threatening to engulf us. Each of us must be a ray of hope.
Rebellions are built on hope.
Welcome to the Skippy and Panty Show. I'm Jen, and today on Signal Boost, we have Felitza Cassano, founder and editor of GirlsInCapes.com, a website exploring gender, race, and sexuality in geek culture. Welcome, Felitza.
Thank you.
So why don't you tell us about GirlsInCapes.com? How did it get started? What is it about?
Sure. So when I first started grad school in 2012, I took a magazine publishing course, where one of our projects was to identify what we thought was a gap in the market and to propose a magazine to fill it. And Girls and Capes kind of came out of this one project I had for one semester and proceeded to become, after 2.5 years, the bulk of my research for my graduate thesis. It's been quite some time since then. We're in almost halfway through year 4, and we went from just me and some other students at the graduate program that I was in to a much larger, we have a TV and film editor, we've got a big staff covering a whole bunch of different sections, covering topics that include books, TV and film, gaming, comics and graphic novels, anime and manga, and then what we like to call subculture, which is everything that doesn't kind of fit in there. We also cover and look at a bunch of topics that wouldn't necessarily get discussed or contributing to discussions of diversity that are going on throughout the internet. For example, when Irish Fist came out last month, one of my staff writers emailed me jokingly, like, oh, I should write an article about kung fu shows and stuff to watch instead. And I told her, well, why are you joking about this? And so now we have five things to watch on Netflix instead of Iron Fist, which is pretty good, and ends with Into the Badlands, which has been, I think, kind of the coolest thing to come out of this year so far, is learning more about Into the Badlands. So one of the things that we try really hard to do is to not really tear down things that we don't think deserve attention, although we do that to some extent. But what we really try to do is to highlight and emphasize media or people that don't necessarily get as much marketing and publicity attention as they may deserve, especially when they're created by women and people of color and people within the LGBT community.
Right. That's half the reason we're doing Signal Boost. You had an editorial, which was your new focus, your resolution for the year.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Like, the impetus for doing that, how you're going about making that happen?
Yeah. So, in the middle of November, one of my staff writers emailed me, and she said, I don't know if this really makes sense, but I wrote this, and I don't know if you can use it or what we can do with it, but I just had a lot of feelings about what happened last week. And that piece turned into, eventually, with a lot of rewriting and a lot of kind of reworking her raw feelings into something cohesive and readable, turned into a piece on the casting of Johnny Depp in the Fantastic Beasts film, and how that, for her, correlated with the election in the sense of the way in which men who do not treat women well and who commit crimes against women don't really face consequences. And after reading this article and working with it so much, and going through everything that I was going through after the election, I really kind of spent a lot of time thinking about what needed to be different about the site. Because for a long time, we had been, instead of writing more about women, we were writing for women, which I think is a little bit different. So I guess in the sense that we were writing about things that women enjoy. So we gave a lot of attention to Harry Potter, to Supernatural. Not quite so much attention, but to Doctor Who, which are all stories that center on the white male experience, the straight white male experience. And at that point, I realized that we'd kind of strayed from what my original intent had been with creating the site, that we weren't really devoting the attention to people of color, that we weren't really devoting attention to uplifting creators who were marginalized and underrepresented. And so this year, as the date approached, I started to think more about what we more specifically needed to do. And so this year, we're doing a lot more call to action. I've been working a lot with Jamie, our new TV and film editor, to develop that section, and between the two of us, to figure out how we can use that section especially, but the site in general, to be more uplifting and to get the word out about things that deserve more attention than they get, you know, in terms of something that's created by, Jamie was just at the Cleveland International Film Festival, and so all of her reviews from the CIFF were films by women. And that was something that we hadn't really had on the site before, you know, talking about independent films that were created by women, that were directed or written by women, that really highlighted different experiences. And so that's been our mission for this year, is to really kind of highlight the people who are in the field, who are doing the work, who should be getting more work, who aren't necessarily doing so.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit more about the categories that you have and maybe how this is playing into each one of those different categories.
Sure. Well, the biggest change this year is definitely to the TV and film section. So up until about October of last year, I was doing all of the editorial work myself. And we have 15 staff writers. So,
oh my goodness.
You know, at one point I realized, well, I need a little assistance here. So I ended up finding an assistant TV and film editor. And at the start of the year, Jamie kind of took a bit bigger of a role, and she's been developing more content. So not just accepting pitches from the staff writers, but also trying to figure out where we can go, where to move forward from there. We also cover a ton of books. My master's degree is in publishing, so I love books. I am a huge space opera reader. I love space operas. I could word barf about space operas quite a bit. I actually do it quite a bit. I found out yesterday that Anne Leckie's new book has a title and a cover, and I freaked out because I somehow missed this. This came out, this information was made public last month, and I just missed it. And she's my favorite. I love her. Also this year, the conclusion to the Broken Earth trilogy by N.K. Jemisin is coming out, and I'm going to faint. I'm going to faint. Again, I could kind of like babble on and on for quite some time. I'm like, I'm staring at my bookshelf of like adult sci-fi fantasy, and I'm just like, oh, that's, I could talk about that. I could talk about that, but that's a dark, dark path that we may not want to go down. I'm also very pleased because Obelisk Gate is up for a Hugo and a Nebula.
Yeah.
And I'm extremely pleased about that. And I'm excited about Everfair being up for awards. And there are so many things that I like that are up for awards. Over the weekend, I bought The End of Worlds by Martha Wells. And Martha Wells is actually one of my favorite fantasy writers specifically. I don't read a ton of fantasy in comparison to science fiction, but her world building is so amazing. I love all of it. I love everything I've ever read from her. So I was very happy.
So what about the comic section or gaming, or I know TV and film, you've got a subcategory of, you guys cover a lot of anime as well.
We do. That we're actually moving that into a separate section now because we have so much. So in the anime and manga section, we're actually kind of partitioning that off because we've really started to do a lot more with it. There's a couple ongoing series that I've been reviewing, a few actually, but I've been reviewing for a while now. One is Monthly Girls Nozaki, which is hilariously funny, and it's basically about every trope that ever existed in a shoujo manga, and all the characters break all these tropes. The anime is one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. I've seen the first episode like 7 times because of all the people I've forced to watch it, and I laugh out loud every single time. partly because I've seen and read so much shoujo that I just kinda, I recognize everything, and so it's like hilarious to me. I've also been reviewing Horimiya, and in volume 6, more recently, I think that was out a couple months ago, it took a really interesting turn. So it's about a boy and a girl who have these kind of like fake personas that they have when they're at school. And then when they're outside of school, they accidentally discover each other's real personalities and kind of proceed forward from there. Unlike every other shoujo manga you ever read, they get into a relationship right away because they're both extremely good communicators and they actually talk about their feelings and what upsets them and what makes them happy. And in the most recent, in volume 6, there's actually an instance in which it addresses partner abuse, which is very odd for a shoujo manga. The girl hits the boy and both of their friends separately tell them, like, this is not okay. Her friend says, you shouldn't do that, and you have to go apologize to him. And his friend is like, you can't let her do this to you because it's wrong. And so that's a really fascinating thing. So it's kind of interesting to see what kind of anime and manga is being brought to the US now and what kinds of topics they're covering. Another thing that's kind of fun is that we actually have a dedicated Yuri reviewer now.
You need to.
Yes. Well, it's actually booming in the US right now. There are a lot more series that are being brought over. Our Yuri reviewer, Emily, she will word barf at me about things. So her latest favorite is Kase-san and Morning Glories, which is just really cute and fluffy, and it's about like an athletic girl and a kind of shy girl, and they have this cute little fluffy romance, and it's adorable. And I see why she's like word vomiting everywhere, and it's wonderful.
That's awesome. What about gaming? How are you covering that topic in a more inclusive way?
The gaming section is actually one of our areas of that needs improvement, we can say. Funny enough, one of our most viewed, pretty much our number one most viewed article of all time is in the gaming section, but for the worst possible reason.
Uh-oh.
It is about a fellow named JonTron.
Ah.
He goes by JonTron on the YouTube. You may know who he is. You made a noise.
Heard the name. Yes.
He is not a charming fellow, we can say. So one of our, way back in 2014, which is such a long time ago now, one of our staff writers wrote an article about a controversy that this particular person had been embroiled in. The article focused on YouTubers who focus on gaming, and more generally, any YouTuber whose income is made basically by the fans, right? So there are a lot of different kinds of web media that, you know, is motivated primarily by the fans. So the staff writer took a look at how two different gaming YouTubers dealt with fan criticism. So when their fans went to them and said, you said this thing in your video and it was horrible and mean and offensive, and one of them apologized individually to every person that contacted him. He edited the video out. He edited the video so that it wasn't there anymore and made a visible dedicated effort not to do it again, which is very impressive, like all things considered. The other fellow, this JonTron fellow, he did not react the same way. He ridiculed everybody who contacted him. And, you can imagine that, like, did not go super well in terms of the fans' feelings about it. So this is our most viewed article of all time because people will literally Google JonTron problematic and then leave vile comments. It is also the only article on the site with the comments turned off.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't take it anymore. I'm like every week we'd be getting these horrific threats, like, to the writer, or like insults to the writer, or just like general spew, like vitriol. And it's very interesting that the point of the article, which is that you should listen to your fans and treat them nicely if that is how you make your money, was fully lost on these people.
Right.
Who proceed to, you know, threaten this writer's life and personal safety and so on and so forth.
The gaming community in a microcosm, especially for women and people of color and people in the LGBTQ community, unfortunately. Well, since we've actually totally surpassed our 15 minutes, as I suspected we might, can you quickly tell me about the name of girlsincapes.com?
Sure. Was kind of fun. The original reason, and you can find an essay that I wrote very close to the start of the site where I talk about this. When I first started the site, we had considered a name more like Women in Capes. We'd discussed that, and that's actually a category on the site where we talk about women who work in the industry and kind of spotlight their work.
Right.
But I ended up choosing Girls in Capes instead. And it's because I feel that a woman is someone who kind of knows who she is and who's come into herself as a person, but a girl is still developing. A girl is someone who hasn't quite figured adulthood out yet. Speaking as someone who has been through both stages, I feel. At the time, I still definitely felt more as if I personally was more in the girl category. And I wanted to write for girls to kind of show them, like, to help them find a place in this community, in the science fiction community, to show them new avenues, to show them different things that they'd never maybe considered before, things that they hadn't quite thought of, and to show them that they're not the only people like them, that there are others, and that they're not alone.
Awesome. Thank you, Felisa. Tell us really quick where we can find you. Obviously, girlsincapes.com, but if you want people to be able to find you individually.
Sure. You can also find us on Facebook and on Twitter and Instagram. We actually, if you follow us on Facebook and if you're in the Philadelphia area, you'll find some events that we run locally in the area.
Awesome sauce. So thank you so much for joining us today and telling us about girlsincapes.com.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. And then thank you, listeners, for joining us today on Signal Boost. Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanty Show. I'm Trishy M, and today on Signal Boost, we have Sarah Gailey. Now, I first heard of Sarah Gailey when she was live tweeting seeing Star Wars for the first time, which I came to know as the Space Voldemort series of tweets. I've also read several funny and or moving stories, short stories by her. And of course, a lot of people know her for her series on tour, The Women of Harry Potter, which, if you haven't read it, I highly recommend you go online and read those. But today, for Signal Boost, we're mostly going to focus on a project of hers that she's been excited and we hopeful readers have been excited to hear about that should be publishing any day now, although it hasn't made it onto my Kindle yet. It's a novella, I believe, called River of Teeth. So, Sarah, tell us about your project.
All right, so River of Teeth comes out on May 19th, and it'll be on your Kindle. May 23rd. Launch party is on May 19th, and I'm losing my mind planning it. But it comes out on May 23rd, and it'll be on your Kindle that morning. River of Teeth is the first novella in a duology, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Should I tell your listeners what it's about?
Absolutely. What's the setting for this story?
So it's set in the American South in the 1890s. The backdrop of this story is a true thing from American history, which is that we almost imported hippos as meat animals. In the early 1900s, America was going through something that we called the meat crisis. We talked about it the same way that we talk today about like the drought in California or a lot of trying to think of American problems that aren't going to make people call you angrily about politics.
Well, like the oil shortage of the 70s or whatever.
Yes, exactly. And it was a huge national conversation. We had too many people, not enough meat. We were in the process of defenestrating the grasslands and turning them into what would later be known as the Dust Bowl. So there wasn't enough grass for the cows to eat, which means there weren't enough cows for the people to eat. And people were saying, we need more meat, right? A lot of people have heard of a famous political campaign from around the same era, chicken in every pot, right? Everyone wanted to talk about making sure everyone had enough to eat. And this very brilliant man came into Congress and said, I have a solution, and my solution is going to kill two birds with one stone. We've got this meat crisis. We've also got invasive water hyacinths choking off the waterways of the Mississippi River. I have the answer, and the answer is hippos. And everybody said, this is a great idea. I don't see any problem with this. Hippos are going to be delicious. He said, yes. In fact, hippos are delicious. They taste just like bacon, and everyone will love them, and we'll bring in hippos. And this went to a vote in Congress. The vote failed by one vote because some jerk came in and said, actually, I've been to Africa and I've seen hippos and they're terrible. And he told everybody about how hippos kill people or whatever, which, you know, I think is like scant excuse for us not having a native population of hippos in the U.S. So that all really, truly happened. River of Teeth pushes those events backward by about 50 years because I wanted to write about cowboys. And I get to make the rules because it's my book. So I push it back by about 50 years and said, okay, this passes. We have a huge land grab in the American South akin to the gold rush. People set up hippo ranches. It all happens very fast with very poor infrastructure and goes horribly, horribly awry. Something that a lot of people don't know about hippos is that they don't like doing what they're told by tiny soft, squishy humans. So if you put them into an environment and then try to say, okay, hippos, you live here, they will get out of here and go feral and populate whatever that area is. This actually happened in Central America where Pablo Escobar had zoos and one of his zoos had some hippos in it. And when the DEA came and smashed up all of his estate, the hippos got out. And now there's a population of like, I want to say like 40 or 50 hippos that just live in Central America now.
I did not know that.
Now you do. Okay, so all of this comes together to form the plot of River of Teeth. In River of Teeth, you have got a country that for the past 50 years has had hippo ranching as a thing that failed, where people brought in the hippos and then the hippos got out and the hippos did what the hippos wanted. And what they wanted to do was populate the Mississippi and eat people. So that's the American South. That's the setting, is an American South that is overrun by feral hippos. Our cast of characters is a motley crew of hoppers, that's hippo cowboys, who have been hired by the federal government to clear the Mississippi of feral hippos.
That's a big project.
It is. They've got a little head start. There was already a program to help herd all the hippos into kind of one area and keep them in that region. So really, they've just got to clear that region of hippos, and that should go fine. The only obstacle in their path, other than all the hippos that will certainly try to kill them, is a riverboat kingpin who uses the hippos for his own nefarious purposes. That's River Teeth.
Okay, and I assume that's the end of no spoiler territory, I suppose. So.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay. So obviously, that's just a fascinating little nugget of history to build your story on. I can see it would be filled with possibilities. But I'm curious, mostly I know you for short stories and essays, so how has writing a novella-length project been different, and how long had you been working on it before it started really to take steam?
Wow. Yeah, so writing longer fiction was terrible. I'm super stubborn, and I had been writing short stories for about a year, and then had this slightly longer idea. But I had spent that whole year saying, I'm not ever going to write long fiction because everyone was asking me when I was going to do it. So that was kind of the worst, hardest part, was saying to all of my friends who had said, when are you going to write something longer? And I had said, never, having to go to them and be like, oh, I am writing something longer now. And then it's going to be 2 books, and that's long too. It's a totally different process. When I write short fiction, I don't outline. I kind of just have my general idea. I know where the beginning and end are going to be. I keep it all in my head, and then I just blah, and I write it, and it's done. Writing long fiction, I have to outline, because otherwise I turn into like a puddle of goo, because I'm trying to keep too much in my brain at the same time. And it's a little brain. It's not a big brain. It can't hold a lot of content. I had to outline. I had to plot all these character arcs, and then I had to revise this massive thing and figure out what that process would be like. But I actually found it really satisfying. I wrote it over the course of Lent in 2016, so I want to say that's 4 or 5 weeks. And I felt at the end of it like I was going to die. I finished the last 4 chapters all in one go, because I had all this momentum and I was really excited. And I wrote end at the end of it. And then my husband tells me I spent about 5 minutes laughing hysterically, and then I fell asleep. And since then, I've written another novelette, or another novella, a novelette, and a novel.
Wow.
Yeah. So I feel like I've found my footing in long fiction, but it still always feels like you're strapped to the front of a rocket ship that you're in the process of building, and that you haven't put any safety features into. It's so different.
You mentioned characters briefly, and I'm confident that we're not going to get a bunch of cliched manly man cowboys, and that's all there is in this story. Tell me about some of the different kinds of characters that we have.
You are absolutely correct that you're not going to get cliched manly men. This is something that I always debate how much I want to talk about, because I kind of like the idea of some people being surprised by it. But there is one cisgender heterosexual white man in the book. It's an ensemble cast. It's like my little queer heart just ripped out of my body and put into a book. It's super queer. A lot of people of color. I am bored out of my mind by stories about manly white men scooping up damsels. Everybody in this book is super tough and cutthroat, and has like killed a billion people and can throw a knife and hit a fly on the wall across the room. But none of them are inhabiting that toxic masculine cowboy stereotype, which is one of my favorite things about writing River of Peace, is a love letter to the Western genre. And loving the Western genre, you know, means you have to look at its flaws. And I really tried to poke at some of those with this narrative and these characters.
Well, that sounds really cool. I'm looking forward to it for sure.
Thanks. I'm excited. I hope people like it.
Right. I'm sure. I was going to ask you about upcoming projects, but it sounds like you have a lot in the pipeline already.
I do. The one that I can sort of talk about is my recently announced book deal with Tor Books, the 3-novel deal. One of the novels they have, the other two I have promised them I have ideas for.
Right.
The one that they have, I think we're changing the title, so I'm not going to say what the title is in case I turn out to be wrong. But it is a novel about non-magical PI who gets hired to investigate a grisly murder at a high school for magical teens. It is about sisterhood and courage and coming to terms with who you are and your shortcomings and the things you don't like about yourself. And I am really super excited about it.
That sounds really neat. I wish we could go on talking for another 15 minutes, but this is Signal Boost, so we're pretty much at the end of our program, unfortunately. But anyone who wants to find out more about you, tell us where people can find you.
My website is sarahgailey.com. That's sarahgailey.com. And they can find me on Twitter. My handle is Gailey Frey. That's Gailey, like my last name. Frey, like the planet that the doctor on Doctor Who is from. And my book is River of Teeth. It comes out on May 23rd. anything else people want to know about, they can ask me.
Okay, great. And reading her other stories and things, I've been confident enough to pre-order it, read some of her stuff online, and think about ordering the book. And I guess we're going to have to end it for today. But thank you so much, Sarah, for joining us on Skiffy and Fanty.
Thank you. I had a great time.
Good. And thank you, listeners, for hearing us on Signal Boost. Awkward ending. And scene.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can find us at skiffyandfanty@gmail.com, on Twitter at skiffyandfanty, on Facebook at The Skiffy and Fanty Show, and on Patreon at patreon.com/skiffyandfanty. Our intro and outro music comes from The Launch by Chronux. You can find out more about their music at freemusicarchive.org.